Accession number 12028, rule 1.
Mr. Hall, rule 1. Whereabouts were you born, please?
In York. Actually, in York itself.
What did your father do for a living?
He was an electrical engineer in charge of the underground electricity set up around York and the surrounding district.
Did you go to school in York?
Yes, I did.
Which school was that?
Tang Hall School, which was a newest school. It was built in 1927, I think.
How old were you when you left?
14.
Did you get a job?
Yes.
What was that?
I went, first of all, for 3 months to work in an ironmonger's shop until there was a vacancy at William Sessions, who were lithographic printers at New Iswick, just outside York, and I got an apprenticeship in the litho department of William Sessions.
How did you come to be in the RAF then?
Well, I volunteered. I joined the RAF Volunteer Reserve. The moment I was 18, I applied, which meant you could be taught to fly at weekends. And I failed the medical through eyesight in I think it was October 38, and then I was given some exercises to do. I went back in January 39. And passed the eye test and was then granted a place in the RFVR as a sergeant pilot under training.
What's attracted you to the RFVR?
I'd always wanted to fly. That's what I wanted to do right from being a small boy. I never wanted to do anything else, really. But I just didn't think there'd be a chance for me. You know, not having most of the people had sort of come from universities and very high educational qualifications that went into the short service commissions of the RAF at the time, and the chances for anyone, any normal schoolboy, to get in were, until the RAFVR was formed, was almost impossible.
Did you find it easy to learn to fly?
Oh, I actually went solo in a third of the time. The average time to go solo in the RAF around that time was 12 hours, and I did it in 4 hours 40 minutes. My instructor said I was a natural pilot. Could have been because I play the piano, I had a gentle touch. They say that pianists and horsemen make the best pilots. I don't know whether that's true or not.
Where did you do your training?
I did it at a place called Brough, which is the Blackburn Aircraft Works near Hull. In East Yorkshire. We did 3 nights a week, theory of flight and stuff at Hull itself, and flying at the weekend. And as soon as I started to fly, I immediately was given 2 weeks off work and did a concentrated 14 days flying. And actually, I had done just over 80 hours when the war was declared. I just started to fly the bigger aircraft, Harts and Hinds, which we had.
What was your reaction when you heard that we were at war with Germany?
Well, I'm afraid we all let up a big cheer. We were very pleased about the whole thing. It's a terrible thing to say, but the chance of to be given one of these Spitfires and Hurricanes to fly, it's a sort of schoolboy's dream come true. And we didn't think about our own sort of danger. I'm sure we didn't. I mean, one always thinks it can never happen to me, and otherwise I don't think people would do it. But there was a tremendous cheer went out of all the VR. There were about 30 of us, and well, that was made our day, as it were.
Were you all around the wireless set?
Yes, we were actually at the group headquarters in Hull. We'd been called up on the 1st of September. Before actually war was declared, we were called up on the 1st of September. And we were all in this big room, and all that was.
Whereabouts in Hull was
that? That was just at a big. I can't even one of the roads, Anleby Road or something like that. I think it was. It was used for giving instruction, you know, on navigation and theory of flight and lantern slides and things. And then, of course, the most disappointing thing was that we were all sent home. So we visions of being sitting in the Spitfire, you know, tomorrow, and we're all sent home. And then, after about a month, we were sent to ITW, that's Initial Training Wing at Bexhill in Sussex, where we did parades and all that. Oh, it was you know. Frustrating in a way. And then in December we were posted, or several of us were posted, to Sealand in Cheshire for intermediate and advanced training.
How keen were you to get into combat, if at all?
Oh, absolutely. We're you couldn't, you know, you just had to. You know, it was something to achieve. My assessment in my logbook was above average as a pilot. On both the assessments, on when I was under training, and having finished my training in May 1940, I was sent home on leave, having been posted to what they called OTU, an Operational Training Unit. But France fell. I had a phone call report directly to 504 Squadron at Wick in Scotland, which I did. I just got a rail warrant from the RTO at York Station, and I joined the squadron without going to OTU.
Do you think that you suffered from not having been to an OTU?
No, I don't. No, because I went in, and actually within a month of being in that squadron, I had my first combat. And again, I suppose, being raw and too keen, I got a bullet right through the cockpit. How it missed me, I'll never know. But it went in that side and out that. And it was from a Heinkel 111 over Scapa Flow, 7 o'clock in the morning.
Can you describe that incident in detail?
Well, only just that we were three of us were vectored around through cloud. It was murky, layers of cloud, very grey. I say it was 7 o'clock in the morning. And we came out, and there was this Heinkel, and the leader, my CO, dived after it. His number two dived after it, and I followed them in. And as we got close, there was this sort of rear gunner. It looked to me like red-hot chain links coming out of the back of it. It was firing at us, and of course he dived into cloud. We didn't shoot it down. We all fired at it, but we were too far away. But this one, as I broke away, one bullet went right through my cockpit. And I came back, and they were all sort of slapping me on the back, saying how lucky I was. And I was lucky, there's no doubt about it.
Was there much fear in that first combat?
No, not really, no. Excitement, terrible excitement. You get very shaky. The excitement. Yes, I really could say that as one progressed with more combats, you still had that same excitement. You never got really used to it. It wasn't a thing that, from my personal point of view, wasn't a thing that I could not think about. One, you know, you had to think about what was going on, but I think if you let yourself think about, I found throughout the war that people in squadrons who used to go to bed early and read a book and not go out and chase the ladies and drink a few pints, they were far more likely to buy it than people who were a little bit on the wild side in fighter command. That is, I mean, I used to when at Hendon during the Battle of Britain. Every night we used to go, after we'd finished flying, we went to the Hendon Way Hotel where I played the piano. And it was quite a night out, you know. We sort of forget our cares of the day and then back to work next morning. Just like a little job, really. We had fairly heavy losses in September from Hendon. I think we lost 7 in one day out of the 18 of us. Not all killed, but, you know, aircraft shot down.
Did you ever come across this phenomenon of lack of moral fibre?
We only had one in the squadron, and that was in January 1941. And he was stripped down to AC2, the lowest rank you can possibly have, and put on cleaning latrines out and things, and taking his wings taken away from him, of course. But he just refused to fly. He didn't want to fly. But that's the only case I've ever come across.
Could you see that he was jumpy?
Not really, no. I think he's probably one of these people that wanted the glamour of it without the actual... you know, the actual job of having to do it.
What did his brother pilots feel about him? Was there any sympathy?
Well, yes. We didn't really have a lot to do with him because he was taken out of the sergeant's mess, of course. We didn't have contact with him. But he was... and then he was posted away and we never sort of heard of him again. I can't even remember his name, no. But he's the only case I've ever... come across, you know, in the service, that one particular case.
Coming back to 504 Squadron, can you tell me about the personnel in the squadron and its leadership? And
well, the CO at the time was a squadron leader Sample, who was a very experienced pilot. The squadron had come back from France, where it had lost nearly half its members. They'd had a very rough time out in France. They were chased right back and just, you know, managed to come back. And we were sent there. Actually, six of us from Sealand went to 504. We'd all known each other for a long time because they were so depleted when they came back from France. But Johnny Sample was a very experienced pilot. Unfortunately, he was killed in 43. Somebody chopped his tail off. Somebody trying to mate with him in a whirlwind and cut his tail off and he was killed. But he actually left us to go and rest early in 1941, and Squadron Leader Rook, who was one of the flight commanders then, was promoted to Squadron Leader and took us out to Russia. With half the squadron left to form 81, and we went out to Russia under the command of Squadron Leader Rook.
Can you remember the names of any of the other five who went from Sealand with you?
Yes, there was Ray Holmes. He's just written a book on Russia. There was Basil Bush. Who was the other one? Those are the people I really remember who were close to me. We were all very friendly.
Did you get much of a welcome when you arrived at the squadron, or was it just taken for granted?
Just taken for granted. I don't think we were really... There was terrific morale, even though they'd been chased out. You know, everyone was very friendly, but there was nothing exceptional about it. We were just, you know... pilots joining the squadron, and we were put under training straight away. Flew a Hurricane almost within a couple of days of getting there, and as soon as you've got your kit together, helmets and things, and I think when I actually had that combat, I think I'd done about 12 hours on Hurricane, something like that, not very many, because you know, there was a lot to do to get us all trained, so of course the flying had to be rationed in a way, I suppose, because they say they'd lost half the squadron aircraft in France, so we were pretty depleted. But when we came down to Hendon, we had a full strength of 18 aircraft.
So there was no sign of depression about the losses?
Oh, no.
What were the duties of the squadron generally
at Wick? Well, it's the main duty, I think, was to train us up to combat standard, the new pilots, of which there were, I think, in all, because there was some came from somewhere else. Turn us up to standard, and we did convoy patrols and interceptions, defensive scupper flow. Of course, you know, the fleet being up there, they used to get these reconnaissance aircraft and things, looking to see what shipping was about, and that's where it was our role. We were just, you know, at readiness all the time, and we were as soon as we were trained up to standard, so we were moved south. To
was it tedious work at Wick?
Rather, going round in circles a lot, and a lot of sitting around, as it was even the Battle of Britain. I mean, you sat around a lot, and then suddenly it was all hell broke loose and you're off. You didn't have time to think about anything else then, and then you'd come back and rearm and refuel and sit around again waiting. It's a strange sensation in a way, really. You know, lots of reading magazines and sitting around, and then suddenly you're airborne, off you go.
Were there any other incidents whilst you were at Wick that you can recount?
Not from my point of view, no. We didn't shoot anything down at all from Wick. We were scrambled several times, but to say, with the layers of cloud, we didn't shoot anything down.
But the Battle of Britain had started in the south.
Yes, it started in the south, but there was not very much going on up in the Wick area.
Were you conscious that a Battle of Britain had started?
Oh, yes, we were all anxious to get going. We were a little bit cross because we were left out of it. You heard these people shooting three or four down, you thought, well, must get down there and have a go. It's an amazing thing to think. But we really couldn't wait to get down there. The terrific morale, wanting to have a go. You know, I don't know what brings one to do that sort of thing. It's excitement, isn't it? I mean, I was only 20. I wasn't married. No responsibilities other than to stay alive for my parents. And everything to gain, really. A good aeroplane. I knew how to fly it well.
What did you think to the Hurricane when you first flew it?
A little bit disappointed. Because we were the first squadron ever to fly on Masters, Miles Masters. And, you know, they had a performance almost on a par with the Hurricane. So when I got in this Hurricane, I expected it to, you know, outshine the Master, and it didn't really, only by about 25 miles an hour in straight and level flight. And of course it was heavier, and so really, initially, a little bit disappointed.
Did your attitude towards the Hurricane change?
Oh yes, as you got used to it, as you flew it more. And we had the ordinary 8-gun. Later on, that we were going to be re-equipped with 4-cannon instead of the 8 machine guns, but we never did get them because we went out to Russia with 12 guns. We had Mark IIs with 12 guns in Russia.
What do you remember about getting the call to go south for the Battle of Britain? How did the call arrive?
Well, the CO came in and said, we're moving south tomorrow. You know, and that was it, we were gone.
What was the scene when he...
Well, everybody was pleased. Even the ground crews. I mean, the ground crews was not disappointed if you didn't fire guns. It's wrong to say that, but, you know, it was their aeroplane that was doing it, and you were their pilot, and they were, you know, keyed up. They wanted to do it. Wanted to go south.
How did you get down south?
We flew down and landed at Catterick in Yorkshire, isn't it? Catterick?
Yes.
Stayed the night there. And then flew down to Hendon the next day.
How did Hendon as an airfield compare with Wick?
Well, we actually moved from Wick to a satellite called Caithness. It was just on the edge of Wick Aerodrome, and that had runways. Well, of course, Hendon was all grass, so it didn't really matter. We were used to, we were all experienced pilots. We didn't have any trouble there. The only snag was, of course, we were right in the balloon barrage. And you had to be pretty careful when the weather was duff. Not to... And in actual fact, later on, when we were at Filton, they put a balloon barrage all round the airfield, and if you wanted to take off, they pulled a balloon down at the end of the runway, you went off, and then they put it up again. And when you wanted to come into land, they pulled a balloon down, let you land, and then put it up again. So that was, you know, you had to be pretty careful if these balloons were in cloud, because there was no way you could see them. You had to know exactly what you were doing. But that was a little bit dodgy. I didn't like that.
What kind of weather was the main hazard?
Well, low cloud, and particularly as it got, you know, towards October, November time, when we were at Filton. Just before we moved to Exeter, I think it was December 40. But it was pretty murky around the Bristol Channel. But you see, they had been bombed very severely. The Bristol Aeroplane Works were bombed on the 25th of September. We moved on the 26th, and they came back again on the 27th, and we were waiting for them. They got the shock of their lives. I was shot down that day too, which is unfortunate.
We come on to that in a
minute. Yes,
can deal with Hendon first.
Yeah.
When you got to Hendon, were you replacing another squadron?
No. We were the and we used to operate with the North Weald. There was a squadron at North Weald, and sometimes we went off with them. You know, we'd scramble, sort of rendezvous with them, and but we were the only actual squadron. There was a communications flight there, but nothing, no operational squadron apart from 504.
How soon did you go into action at Hendon?
Well, the next day. I mean, the aeroplanes were all armed up ready. I mean, we flew down ready. If we'd seen anything on the way, we could have had a go at it, if it had been about.
Do you remember that first day in action in the south of England?
Only been scrambled, and you know, a lot of the times you didn't see anything. It was disappointing in a way that you'd be scrambled too late, or they'd turn back, or I think it must have been 4 or 5 days before we shot anything down, because you know, depending on the weather and whether they turned back and how big a raid it was, whether it was just a fighter sweep, or we really, again, it came into our own when they started bombing London, because they bombed the docks first of all. They started by doing the channel early in July and August, and then they moved further inland, and then they decided to bomb London, and that's when, of course, we were right in London, and that's when we did manage to come into our own, as it were.
What typically would happen over London?
Well, there'd just be squadron scramble, and you'd go off in a bunch and be vectored onto wherever they were coming from. You know, 50 plus coming in over Dover or wherever it was, or you know, whichever point of the coast they were crossing, and then hopefully you'd have Spitfires above you to cover the fighters. And the Hurricanes are supposed to go for the bombers, but it never did. It never really worked out like that. It was every man for himself. If you got, you know, you got a sky full of aeroplanes. And the funny thing about air fighting is, you can be in a terrific fight, and within 2 or 3 minutes the sky is empty. That happens so often, because I suppose it's turning. You don't realise where you are. You're turning like mad, perhaps, with somebody trying to get on your tail, and you might lose height or gain height. You don't look at your instruments. You just fly by the seat of your pants, as it were.
What's the first time in combat at Hendon that sticks out in your mind, the first incident?
Well, just being in a mass. It was a mass raid, and I actually chased a 109, which had nothing to do with the bombers at all, but it was just a mass of aeroplanes. We all got split up, and we all landed in dribs and drabs, you know. The idea was we were taught to all go in together and peel off, and nothing like that ever happened. It was just one big free-for-all, as it were. And you just found yourself near enough to an aeroplane to shoot at, or to look for one to chase it and have a go. And I think if you talk to people that have been shot down, nearly half the pilots who are shot down never would have been if they'd seen it coming. I mean, I didn't see what shot me. I knew what shot me down because they were the only aeroplanes in the sky at the time. But I didn't know what it was. You know, I'd already shot one down myself, a 110, and suddenly I was looking for something else, and suddenly smell of burning, and it hit the oil tank, a bullet can shell in the oil tank, and of course the engine seized up. So I put it into a spin and landed wheels up in the field. That's how I got out of it.
What was the date of that again?
That was September the 27th, over just south of Bristol.
What was the weather like at the time?
Like today, clear blue sky. But I thought, you know, the engine was useless, and there was lots of aeroplanes about. There was our squadron and 40 110s, measurement 110s. And I thought the best thing I can do is make it look as though I've had it, so I put it in the spin at about 10 to 12,000 feet, and kept it in this spin until I was sure that they'd left me alone. I spun a long way down and then left the wheels up, put the flaps down, pumped the flaps down, landed wheels up in the field, and there was a chap sort of doing his farm work. He was quite cross about it. He didn't know whether I was English or not. I hastily made myself known, and I put my parachute on my back and walked to the road, and there was a chap with a, I think he was a commercial traveller of some sort. He took me to the nearest pub, and of course I couldn't get through because all the lines to Bristol were down through the bombing, so they didn't know where I was. And I eventually got back to Bristol, to Templemead Station, at 11:30 that night. And that happened at 10 o'clock in the morning, when I was shot down. But I was trying to get through, but they entertained me royally. They gave me lots of beer and sandwiches and things. And eventually I got back to my squadron late that night.
And you were totally unscathed?
Absolutely, yes. No trouble at all. Because the Hurricane, you see, it had this very big radiator underneath. It was safer to land them wheels up than it was to land a Spitfire, because we were more rugged underneath.
Coming back to